Welcome to the Quotivation Podcast. Together, we will unlock inspiration one quote at a time. Your host is one of America's top emerging public speakers. He is a former semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking and is an expert motivator. Please welcome Jody Powell.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Quotivation Podcast, where we unlock inspiration one quote at a time. Now, I hope you had an amazing weekend and that you're ready to move ahead and win your week. And after two very special episodes, we're ready to get back to it right here. So let's get busy inspiring you to win your week. You know, I've always been amazed at how time can seem to stand still and yet go by so fast. And I met two friends last week for coffee on different days. And the first friend I've known for just a few months from our Toastmasters group, and it feels like we've known each other for a really long time. We shared about our Toastmasters journey and what's next for us in speaking and what we want to get out of Toastmasters and our goals and our ambitions. We give each other advice on speeches and the things that we're working on. We share about our families, and we just really enjoy helping each other develop as speakers. And although we've only been friends for a very short time, it just seems like we've known each other for years. Now, my other friend that I met for coffee the next day, I actually hired her 5 or 6 years ago, and I knew right away that she was so much more talented than I was. She was that scary hire. And of course, I hired her right away. And I was right. She has an incredible marketing mind. I meet with her often just to verify the things that I'm thinking and enhance any business ideas or marketing concepts that I have. She's a trusted advisor. And we've known each other for 6 or 7 years now. And it feels like 5 minutes. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. Time is a tricky taskmaster. We have to recognize the moment and live in the moment and not wait for the future. Because I'm going to tell you something about the future. The future comes like a thief in the night, and it steals the present. So enjoy your time. Enjoy your now time with your family, with your kids. Enjoy your time by yourself, at work, and at play. And enjoy the time that we have together right now to help you win your week. So let's get started. What do you say we start off like we do every episode with a shot of motivation? And this week, our shot of motivation is sponsored by Amy Real from Fairway Mortgage. Amy is the real deal in all things mortgage. And you need to ask her about that Quotivation special. Okay, it's not the Quotivation special. It's for everybody. But you can still ask her about the cash guarantee program that will make you a cash offer to buy your home if it doesn't sell in the allotted time period. This completely removes that need for a contingency to buy. And the questions that come with that are, is somebody going to buy my house so that I can buy this house? Or is somebody going to buy their house so I can sell my house? This removes all of that. So give Amy a call today. Her phone number is 864-310-9337. That's 864-310-9337. And you can also email her at her new email address at Fairway Mortgage. And that email is amy.reihl, R-E-I-H-L, at fairwaymc.com. And that's to get in touch with Amy Real. And when you do, tell her you were Quotivated to get your mortgage deal done, because Amy Real is the real deal for all things mortgage. And her NMLS number is 486620. And as always, thanks, Amy.
It's time for a shot of motivation, where the vibe's like taking a shot, but the high is pure inspiration. This is a quick, powerful boost of motivation to fire up your spirit. Get ready for a rapid infusion of uplifting stories, impactful quotes, and game-changing ideas. It's the swift, potent dose you need to amp up your game and win your week. It's a shot of motivation.
I'd like to play a little word association game. We've done this before in other episodes, but I'm going to say a word, and I want you to grab hold of the first thing that enters your mind after hearing the word. Don't second guess yourself. Don't push that out of your mind and try to think of something else. The first thing that comes into your mind, I want you to grab hold of it. Now, in order to do this, let's take a deep cleansing breath. Let's clear our mind. You can even close your eyes if you can. If you're driving, please don't do that. If you're somewhere that requires you to keep your eyes open, please do so. But if you can, close your eyes and take that deep breath and clear your mind and prepare to hear this word and to capture the very first thing that enters your mind. And here's your word. Sanctuary. What was your first thought? What entered your mind first? For me, it was the image of the inside of a church. Being raised in church, that was where we went to worship. We called it big church. It's where you went to sit quietly and twiddle your thumbs and listen to some music and listen to some guy say some words before you could go to the local restaurant and eat chicken or hamburgers, your Sunday lunch, or before you went over to grandma's and had a huge home-cooked meal and played with your cousins and your friends. Others of you may have heard the word sanctuary and thought something different. Maybe political asylum. Some political leader whose government was overthrown is seeking sanctuary in another country. Some of you may have thought of something for an animal. Bird sanctuaries, wildlife sanctuaries, places where hunting and poaching are prohibited. But here's the thing that all sanctuaries should have in common, whether you thought of a religious sanctuary, an animal sanctuary, a political sanctuary, or if you thought of something else, every sanctuary should elicit a feeling of safety. How many of you have a sanctuary? How many of you have several sanctuary places you can go to look inward, to have reflection on life and your life and how it's going, decisions you've made and things that you've done and where you want to go and goals you want to set? For some people, a sanctuary could just be a place to unload the burdens that they feel. For others, it's a place of invigorating excitement and recharging of the batteries. And you can have multiple sanctuaries. There's nothing wrong with having a sanctuary. Even Superman had his sanctuary, his fortress of solitude, a place that he could go to feel safe, to be himself, to figure out life and the problems that come along with it. We all need that sanctuary, but not all of us have the time and ability and capability to build an ice castle in the North Pole like Superman did. I have several sanctuaries, and they serve different purposes, and we use them at different points and at different frequencies. I'll start with one that it takes a little while to get to. One of my sanctuaries is the beach. Now, where I live, I'm 3 to 3.5 hours away from the nearest beach. Easily a day's drive. If I needed to, I could drive to the beach. I could sit out on the beach all day and then drive home. But we like to go a little further than that because we are 3.5 hours away from the coast on the Atlantic Ocean. We enjoy going south to the Gulf of Mexico, which is a further drive. We enjoy going there to unwind, to recharge, to vacation. But make no mistake, it is absolutely a sanctuary. The clear, crystal water of the Gulf, the beautiful white sand, so soft, feels amazing between your toes. My wife and I will go on vacation to the Gulf of Mexico, and we will take two chairs and a cooler full of water, and we will sit down on the beach, and we will sit there all day long. We don't say much to one another because it's a sanctuary for us both. We both feel safe there. We both take time to think about and inwardly reflect on how things are going, what's on our mind, where we want things to go. We've made some really important decisions for ourselves and for our family right there on the beach. It's a sanctuary. We feel safe there. But you can't always get up and go to the beach. You can't always do that. You don't always have the time, the money, the ability, the time off from work. And so what do? You find other sanctuaries. There's another sanctuary that I have that I like to go to when I'm feeling a little bit lost, when I feel like I need to pray, when I feel like I need to find guidance and to recenter myself. It's a little place just outside of our hometown. It's at the base of the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains, the northern part of the county that we are in. And the name of it is Pretty Place. And it's a little open air church sanctuary. There are pews and benches. There's a cross overlooking this beautiful view of the Piedmont of South Carolina from the top of a mountain. The views are gorgeous. You should Google Pretty Place in South Carolina and you'll see the images pop up. They're absolutely stunning. And I like to go there every now and then when I need to be centered, when I need to be quiet, when I need to hear and listen to what nature offers, when I need to soak in a sight so stunning that it leaves you breathless. But again, not all of us have time to drive 30 minutes away from our hometown and spend a couple of hours in a place like that. So what do you do when you are really crunched for time? Well, you find your sanctuary closer to you, to where you are. And one place that I don't think we think about in terms of a sanctuary that we absolutely should, that absolutely should be your sanctuary, is your home. Your home, without a doubt, should be the one place that you can go that you feel safe. And if home is not a place that you feel safe, if you are one of the many millions of people who are scared to go home because of someone that's there, maybe you're facing an abusive relationship. You're facing physical or mental or emotional abuse coming from inside the home. That's not normal. That's not okay. And what I need you to do right now, if that is you, I need you to stop this podcast and call 1-800-799-7233. That is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Oh, but I've never been physically assaulted. Doesn't matter. There are all kinds of forms of abuse, and no one deserves that. Everyone should have a place of sanctuary. Everyone should feel safe in your own home. Men, I am also talking to you because domestic violence is not always a man perpetrating the violence on his spouse. Sometimes it's the other way around. And whether it's the man perpetrating or the female perpetrating or whatever the case may be, none of it is okay. Not the physical abuse, not the emotional abuse, not the verbal abuse. So stop this podcast and call 800-799-7233 right now. Go. For the rest of us, home should absolutely be a sanctuary. And I want you to be careful with that, because a lot of times what will happen is that we will say things like, oh, well, you know, I find sanctuary when I come home and I play with my kids, when I toss the football around in the backyard, or we have a tea party, or bath time, or I put them to bed and I read them a story. That's my sanctuary. No, it's not. All of those things are wonderful. All of those things you should absolutely want to do and need to do as a parent. Yes, do them. But don't consider that your time, your sanctuary time. Because the focus, like most of the day, is on other people, not on you. You still have to find that space and that time to give to yourself. And so maybe it's a favorite room, maybe it's a favorite chair. You don't even have to be alone. The kids, you put the kids to bed and you and your spouse are watching television, or you're in the sitting room reading books. That's your sanctuary time. A time for you to be able to look inward, to make sure that everything's okay here in your heart. Everything's okay here in your mind. Do a self-check. How am I doing? And be honest. Be honest with yourself. That's what a sanctuary affords. Now, sometimes even that is not possible. So what do I do if I'm not at home and suddenly I find myself in need of a sanctuary? I need to go somewhere. I need to be alone. I need to be alone with my thoughts to give the world a ponder. What do I do? A sanctuary could be anywhere. One of the things that I do, and I am able to do this for a variety of reasons, one of which is that my wife has a condition called adrenal fatigue syndrome. Now, what that means is that her adrenal system works on a different timetable than the normal person. Our adrenal systems, when you're, quote, normal, tend to work on a 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. schedule. You wake up, you start getting your morning started, you begin to get that energy. Around 8 a.m., things start to clear up, the fog begins to lift, and you have energy throughout the day, and it goes in a big bell curve, and it begins to curve downward and level off around 8 or 9 p.m. So it's good for 12 hours. About that time, you start to wind down and prepare yourself for a night's sleep. With adrenal fatigue, that bell curve shifts in time. And for my wife, that time period is really between about 12 noon and 12 midnight. And so for her to wake up early and do something, for her to wake up early and have somewhere to be, it's very taxing on her body. Her energy level never gets to its peak. She also can't go to bed early, no matter how hard she tries, no matter how tired she is. Sleep doesn't come for her until after midnight. And so in the mornings, I have a few hours to myself, because the dog's ready to eat and I have to get up and feed the dog and let the dog out, which is fine. And so if I'm not at home in my sanctuary time there, if I'm out in the mornings and I need some time and I want some time, I'll go to the local McDonald's, pick up my handy dandy McCafe, which I get black and hot, and I ask for the cream and Splenda on the side because I make my own concoction. I don't trust anyone to make my coffee the way that I make my coffee. And yes, I said McDonald's. Yes, I said McCafe, because it's the best coffee in the world. If you don't believe that, then you need to go find your sanctuary until you come out of that believing that. And oh, by the way, McDonald's. Yes, product placement very easy here on the Quotivation Podcast. Call me. But I go through the McDonald's drive-thru and I'll park the car at a strip mall where there's restaurants and shops that usually don't open until 10 a.m. So the parking lot is empty. And I'll park the car and I'll drink my coffee and I'll think I will speak. I will work on my keynote speeches. I will work on projects that are coming up that I have to attend and speak at. I'll practice. Do certain words sound right together? Are the phrases combining to say what I want them to say when I speak? And I speak loudly in my car. No one's watching. No one can hear. And I don't care if they can, because I feel safe. My point in all of this is that we all need to find our space. We all need to find that space where we feel safe, that we can look inwardly, that we don't have to focus on anyone or anything else. We don't have to look for the dangers that are out there. We don't have to think about the things we worry about that are external forces that we typically can't control. We're not on guard. Sanctuary allows you to let your guard down. It's where you go when you respond with flight or fight with flight. You flee to your sanctuary because that's where you feel safe. So find your safe space so that you can look inwardly. You can do that evaluation. You can do that check of yourself. Make sure you're okay. Make sure that internally you're okay. Make sure that externally the relationships you are in are okay. They're safe. Make sure you have clear goals ahead, because it's within your sanctuary that you can set goals. It's within your sanctuary that you can put a plan in place to attack your goals. It's within your sanctuary that you find the answers to the questions that you have in life. Why am I even here? What am I going to do with my life? Where did the time go? Well, we don't worry about where the time went in our sanctuaries. We worry about what are we going to do with the time that we have. We focus on that, and that will move you forward. Find your sanctuary this week, and I guarantee you, simply finding it will win this week. And then tune in next week. Maybe we'll just discuss, okay, I found my sanctuary. Now what? What do I do? We'll talk about that next week in next week's Shot of Motivation. But this, for this week, will absolutely help you win your week. And that is your Shot of Motivation. And as always, our Shot of Motivation is brought to you by Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage. Thanks, Amy.
This has been a Shot of Motivation from America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. We hope it helps you win your week.
All right, let's get to our special guest this week. Paul Pappy is the CEO of SunFast Corporation, a 45-year-old international distribution company specializing in procurement and strategic support on fastener hardware, tools, safety, floor and ceiling solutions for advanced manufacturing. Paul also supports a vast number of like-minded professionals throughout the upstate of South Carolina with similar focus. He serves on four boards as well, including Women Confidence Builders, Man in the Mirror, Professional Network Connections, and the Travelers Rest Police and Fire Foundation. Paul's life, both professionally and personally, has been focused on service, and he believes that everyone deserves an opportunity to be truly served selflessly. Please welcome to the Coordination Podcast, Paul Pappy. Paul, how are you, buddy?
Doing great this morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have this conversation. Really excited about getting to your quote, because you sent it to me. It's one of my favorites, man. I can't wait to get to it. Before we do that, tell us a little bit about Paul. Tell us about the SunFast Corporation. Tell us about your service mind. Give us the lowdown on Paul Pappy.
Well, I'm a simple man, really, but my roots in this company and this community go way back. I've been here since 1995, and moved down here from Baltimore, Maryland, when I was just turning 16. So I started my junior year in high school down here, and it was definitely a transition, to say the least. But you know, over the years, I've tried to find 100 different reasons to leave Greenville, and I find 100 reasons to stay. And so, you know, coming into my own, I failed out of three colleges. I think I have a cumulative GPA of like 0.32. So my transcript isn't worth the paper it's printed on. But at the same time, during that time of realizing that Booksmart waved bye-bye to me a long time ago, I got to know a lot about people. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned a lot of different tricks of the trade to get what you want, get what you need, get to where you're going. And while there's some negative connotations to that lifestyle, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about the world in which you live. And as you grow up and you mature, you kind of bring some of that scar tissue with you for your benefit. Mm. So the good stuff that remains, I'm very proud of. I'm very happy to have brought those life lessons with me. So in 2000, I had a bad breakup in college. I was working several jobs in Charleston, and my dad, who at the time was running SunFast very successfully, said, enough is enough. I got to get you out of there. We got to get you some direction. We got to start building some riverbanks. Yeah. So he came and grabbed me up out of Charleston and put me to work at SunFast. And when I came to work, he handed me a pair of yellow gloves and said, the Paul Pappy I know is capable of doing this job. So if you do really well, he said, I may give you a broom. And so once I learned how to use the broom, I started, working in the warehouse, working in quality, started doing some account management, and just kind of learned all the different facets of the business. And all this time, I'm still trying to become more than a 12-year-old mentally. Mm-hmm. And so, yep. Like a lot of guys, I matured late. but learned a lot of cool stuff along the way. And fast forward to 2012, my dad got sick with cancer for the second time, ended up passing 3 months after his diagnosis in wow. January of 2013. And so at that point, I thought that I was ready. You know, young guys really advantageous and, motivated by the wrong things believe that they're ready, mm-hmm. believe that they're ready for responsibility, ready for leadership, ready for decision-making, critical thinking, active listening. And I just wasn't.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the guy I had looked up to, granted our relationship was tough at most of the time. We just had two different visions for kind of where we wanted to see things go. And, but ultimately when he wasn't there anymore, part of my grieving process was kind of wandering, trying to figure out what direction I was going, trying to figure out how to be responsible for the people that worked for the company, to demonstrate that I was capable of handling the responsibility that had been legacied to me.
Yeah.
And for a couple of years between my mom and I, we battled back and forth trying to figure out how to fill that chasm between us that had been left. And ultimately in 2018, my mom decided to retire, and it was just kind of like, all right, well, I got the reins now and I'm ready to see what we can do. So let's diversify. Let's run with some of these ideas. And I guess it just became second nature to me to be curious about how the people sitting across from me felt about distribution, supply chain, but more importantly, the relationship that they have with those people.
Sure.
And so I wanted to be different. I had always wanted to be different. I always wanted to be a standout. It wasn't for attention. Moreover, it was figuring out my identity and just kind of harnessing that and just trying to be a good human.
Yeah.
Knowing that I still had so much to learn and so much to understand that I didn't understand.
Right. Right.
And so I started just surrounding myself with great people that really tried to push me in the right direction, poured a lot of wisdom into me, and really filled those gaps that my dad's absence had left. Now, meanwhile, if you backtrack to 2008, I married my wife. She was the first person I had ever met that was more important to me than me. And everything started to change when she came into my life. It was just kind of an awakening. So we just celebrated, or we're getting ready to celebrate Friday, our 16th anniversary.
Awesome.
So yeah, we got two great kids. My 14-year-old son just graduated from eighth grade. He's going into high school, shaking Ooh. Like a leaf.
Right.
I am too, in a lot of ways. But being a parent, when you couple that with being a business owner, I mean, in a lot of ways, there are childlike qualities to running a company as well with the people you work with. I'm not saying they're childish, but I mean, you have to kind of adapt to the way that they learn. You have to change the way that you think to kind of appreciate their perspective. And sometimes you just have to back up and punch, you know? But, you know, learning how to be flexible and have some latitude with people was something I really latched onto well. And I think that our culture today is representative of that ability. But it's a God-given gift. I mean, if you're able to run a company with all these different personalities and all these different points of view, and do it well, then I think you've got something special.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we sit today. And so the service mantra, I mean, if you don't learn to first figure out how to serve your employees, you can't figure out how to serve a customer.
Mm-hmm.
So I really focus hard on being able to serve my people and, you know, compensate them well, give them some flexibility on when they need to be out, because they've all got families too.
Sure.
And so you really empathize with them when you're in a situation where you've got to be a dad or you've got to be a husband and you've got to take care of things. When they get into those situations, it really helps you to say, you know what, when I was in this situation, you know, I had some grace.
Yeah.
I had to go deal with this and I was given grace. So therefore I'm going to show grace. And all of a sudden it's kind of a behavioral pattern that you get into with people where you understand that we all make mistakes. We're all human beings and we're all burned out on the day to day.
Yeah.
If you can't give grace there, I mean, when you get into a situation when you need it, you'd be ashamed to ask for it.
Sure.
And so the relationships we have with our customers now is more based on that give and take of grace. We have great communication and our customers really tend to stick around with us. We don't really lose any customers. In fact, one of our best customers has been with us for 40 years. And we've got two customers still with us after 40 years and 38 years. So that's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of the remnant of when my dad was, in fact, there are two customers my dad picked up, and to kind of still have those around reminds me of how great this business is.
Yeah. How powerful is it to be able to continue that legacy, to be able to know that something that your dad started, that ultimately looking back on it, I would imagine that you saw his guiding hand. And at the time it may have felt like, you know, the hand was slapping you across the head, but it really was just guiding you to something that he knew was inside of you. How cool is it to carry on that legacy for him?
It's an honor. And it's humbling at the same time. Because the company is different today than it ever was under his leadership.
Sure.
And that's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just different. Yep. And it's a way that I always wanted it to be, but I still want to pay homage to the work that he and my mom put in and building that foundation for me to stand on today. And I would be remiss if I didn't honor that legacy.
Absolutely. Paul, what is it like? Talk a little bit about the burden of entrepreneurship, of being the guy. And you talked about kind of wandering there for a couple of years after the passing of your dad. I would imagine that the burden you felt, not just for yourself, for your family, for the legacy, but for the people that worked for the company. Tell me a little bit about how you work through that and how you use that as fuel to move forward.
Well, we touched on identity, and we're going to touch on it again in a little bit when we talk about my quote. You know, as a young man, you'll struggle with identity in a lot of different ways.
Hmm.
You know, to who do you belong? To what do you belong? To what group of people do you belong? And I think at the end of the day, just trying to figure out what your place is in this world is such, I mean, it's such a primary task that as men, we have to discover.
Yeah.
I can't empathize with what women have to go through to find where their place is. But as a man, I do understand, you know, we're called to be in positions of leadership. And, you know, just my dad had his way of doing things and his way of leadership. Yeah, that push was always there. And sometimes it left a mark. So we just need to be pushed sometimes against our will because we're too stubborn for our own good to get out of our own way. And sometimes we want what we want so blindly that we'll ignore true wisdom because of how we feel about how that wisdom is being applied.
Yeah.
And we're not really in a place to accept it. And so there's a struggle that goes on there as an entrepreneur of saying, you know what, if this is going to be mine, if I'm going to, number one, honor the legacy that my parents built in this company, and number two, make it my own, and number three, figure out my position in all of that. I mean, that is a big struggle. And oftentimes when you hear it's lonely at the top, what that speaks to is points of empathy. Usually the people that are around us in our immediate family, our wives, our mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, whatever, they get to a point where they don't have empathy anymore because they don't stand in your shoes.
Yeah.
And it's tough to find people to talk to about the struggles that we have as entrepreneurs, the adjustments that we have to make, kind of like, you know, calling an audible, if you will, for a sports reference. I got to throw one in there.
Absolutely.
Just for testosterone. But I think that the ability to adapt in this position is, it's incredibly important. You have to become what your people need you to be. You have to become what your customers and suppliers need you to be. You have to become what the community expects you to be. And so your ability to kind of change some things about yourself or harness the things about yourself that make you who you are, you got to have the courage and discipline to follow that.
Yeah.
And again, it takes maturity. It takes failure. It takes success. But all of those things put together create this person that is different from the rest.
Yeah.
And I think where I sit now, it took a lot of failure to get here, but ultimately the failure is what makes us strong.
Yeah. And all of the work, everything that goes into it, like you said, making those changes, like understanding your place in the world and how you impact others, that's a lot of work. So that's not just work that anyone can do. I would imagine you also have to have a passion, a burning desire to do it, because no one's going to want to do all of that work if they're not really wanting to be the one in charge. What fuels you? What is your passion? What do you like from this experience as an entrepreneur? What do you take from it?
Let me back up on that. It's not about what I like. It's more over what I'm called to do. And there is a passion and a desire for me to connect with people. And I think outside of the business, outside of the construct of being an entrepreneur, I think figuring out how to connect human to human is something that a lot of people miss. And I think that there's something intrinsically valuable in people that only a select few can really dig out and find and chase after. I've seen the greatest in people when they're struggling, when they're down and out, having the courage to stick out a hand and ask for help. But being on the other side of that, I've been on both sides of it, but being able to extend that hand and offer that help, it's gratifying to the soul.
Yeah.
And I think that's not a mistake. I mean, we're created to be that kind of human is when somebody's in need, reach out a hand, help them. And it doesn't matter what the capacity is of the help. The need is there.
Right.
You have to respond to it. You have to want to respond to it. And sometimes that hurts and it's uncomfortable, but ultimately it grows you.
Yeah, it definitely grows you. And I love what you said there. It's not necessarily about the capacity of help, because there's a lot of times I think people will look around and say, I would love to do something. I just don't have the means, or I don't have the ability to completely fill that need. You don't have to. You know, if you have something to give, if it's, you know, if it's money, if it's time, if it's energy, effort, whatever it is, and it doesn't fully meet the need, but it contributes, I mean, that's just as important and that's just as necessary as someone coming in and scratching off a check and you know, paying off someone's bills. I mean, it's just the ability to be able to reach out and say, I don't have much, but here, you can have what I have. And that's probably more meaningful than you know, someone with, you know, exorbitant amount of means that come in and just kind of nonchalantly, you know, provide, right? I mean, it's a sacrificial giving that's so powerful.
And you have to give with joy too.
Sure.
You know, time is the most precious commodity we have. It's greater than any check that we could ever write. You know, once it's spent, it's gone. You can't earn more time.
Right.
And so I think that if you have time to give, give it. I mean,
Yeah.
I would love to have more time in the day. You know, nobody ever has enough time. But when you can carve out time and give it up for somebody else's benefit, that's the greatest sacrifice you can make.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said that I really liked. You said, as you were going through this process, kind of coming into your own, you surrounded yourself with great people. And I think that is incredibly important for someone that is really, that feels like they're wondering, that's kind of feeling out their way. So as you went through that process, Paul, how do you identify, gosh, you know, I need someone who does this? And then how do you go find them? Because I think surrounding yourself by great people is one of the most best kept secrets there is in terms of gaining success in business, in relationships, and in life. So how do you find those people, those great people to surround yourself with?
Well, I think identifying the character of people is important. And to do that, you have to know your own character. You have to be consistent in that behavior. And I didn't really mature until I was 42. And I'm 44 today. And I think when I'm 46, that number will be 44. So ultimately, I think we're constantly in this evolution of growth internally. Yeah. But character identification is something that helps us tremendously. And so, first of all, you have to be willing to put yourself in front of people.
Yeah.
Secondly, you have to be able to engage those people in conversations deeper than a thimble. You know, I think we get caught in the lines that are blurred between wants and needs. And I think that needs are discovered over time. You know, needs are very nonspecific, and they generally come up without the other person knowing they've shared one. And, they're oftentimes expressed as pain in some way.
Yeah.
And so when I am with a group of people, you know, I'm always looking to identify certain aspects of their character, something that makes me curious, something that makes me want to know more, something that demands a second conversation. It could be something they say, their mannerisms, body language, how they command a room, their charisma, the gravitas, if you will.
Yep.
Something that just kind of pulls you in. Because I'm very much attracted to people that have that gravity about them, because I have my own.
Sure.
And so when you're in close proximity to somebody with their own, it is very much like a magnetic response. If you have similar poles, they're not going to want to touch each other, but they will get close enough to where you can feel the field.
Right.
So, you know, forgive the metaphor, but that's kind of how it is. You find certain counterpoints in another person that makes sense to you, and then you pursue it with reckless intent.
Yeah.
And it either becomes a long life relationship or it becomes a single serving relationship. You know, it just depends on how far your two personalities will carry you.
Yeah. And both types of relationships are important. I mean, some people come into our lives for a season. Some people are in our lives for the entirety of our lives, and that's okay. We gain benefit and we give benefit. We receive and we pour into both of those relationships equally. And so when you can find that mutually beneficial relationship, whether it be, as you said, just kind of a single service relationship, or it becomes one of those lifelong or something in between, if both people are better off because of it, then it's a success. And it's incredible.
Correct.
Paul, I want to get into your quote. I love this quote. So what I want you to do, I want you to tell us what the quote is, who said it, and why is this quote impactful to you?
Well, Ralph Waldo Emerson, he's just full of fantastic quotes and would have been great at a dinner party, you know. But the quote that I selected is, to be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. And that just kind of resonates with me because I was a follower in my youth. I wanted to kind of blend in and be in the shadows. And when we moved to South Carolina, my mom had told me, you have an opportunity to be whoever you want because you're moving to a place where no one knows you. And she said, I think the fact that you don't really know who you are yet gives you an opportunity to kind of explore who that guy is.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the attitude shift that I had. And if you had known me when I was younger than 16 years old, you'd be like, who is this guy? But when I moved down here, I just kind of blossomed into somebody that I had never known. And I'm still getting to know that guy over time. But when I became a Christian, I mean, we talked about identity a lot, identity in Christ, you know, to whom you belong. And that's one side of it. But I think as a man, finding your identity is, you know, kind of what your service position is in this world. What's your purpose of existence?
Sure.
And I think all sentient beings desire to know what their purpose is. And everyone wants to know, why am I here? It's as simple as figure out what you do well, repeat that in front of others so that they might repeat it in front of others. That goes for discipleship. That goes for ethical business practice. That goes for just being a good human.
Yeah.
And I've fallen in love with it. I mean, I really discovered that, you know, where my place is in the world is to help people. And long after Sunfast is gone, that's what I want my life's work to be about, is figuring out where the need is and extending that hand. And so that is a passion of mine in and of itself. But to go through this life not knowing who you are, just kind of being a chameleon to fit into whatever environment you find yourself, it's very confusing. It's very lonely, and there's a bunch of other adjectives that could go with it, but it's just being lost.
Yeah.
And that's no way to really experience the life that we've been given. So I think standing firm on your identity is everything, because today in this world, gosh, if you're on social media for 5 seconds, you know that everybody wants you to be something different. They want you to believe something different. They want you to act like somebody different. And I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of ways, identity is kind of your passage through this life. If you can figure out who you are and what you believe in and stand on those things, just live it out.
Yeah. I really think that's so important, because there is just an identity crisis in the world today. And as you said, there are so many things that can try to influence you one way or the other. So many outside forces that are trying to tell you how to be different, or how, or what to believe, or what to think, or what to say. Paul, you mentioned when you moved here down south, which I imagine is quite the cultural shift coming from Baltimore to South Carolina. And so
just
there was a lot, yeah, just a little different, right? Yeah. So there's a lot to get used to in that regard. But then to say, here's the opportunity to really define who I am, and not have someone say, yeah, but I remember who you were, right? And bringing that up. How do you do that? How do you go about reflecting within yourself to truly find who you are in this world?
Well, I am not ashamed of my past. I was an addict for 8.5 years. I'm definitely not ashamed of it. I'm not afraid of it. I've overcome. In fact, July 5th this year will be 20 years clean for me.
Awesome. That's amazing.
And, you know, it really goes a long way to remember where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have things in our past that we're not proud of, but they've also helped shape us into who we've become.
Sure.
And so I think if we forget the lessons that we've learned, we are absolutely doomed to repeat them. So, I mean, I think that if anybody is going to force me to relive my past, I'm not afraid. My past is what made me who I am, and the lessons I learned in that life, I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And so I think that if anybody wants to shame somebody else for the struggles they've had in life, the mistakes they've made, the bad choices they've made, that's a disservice.
Yeah.
So we don't have to live in that place.
We don't, and it happens far too often. And, you know, it's been exacerbated by the emergence of social media. People can hide behind keyboards and be the biggest bully that they want to be. They type things they would never say to someone's face, and they do so in a way that absolutely to the fragile ones can destroy someone. It can absolutely destroy their identity, their self-esteem, their self-worth, and all because, you know, people are just trying to build themselves up and they don't know how. And so it's tearing others down in order to make you feel better about yourself, which is the absolute wrong way to do it. And it just leads to so many problems with kids, with our youth, with society, because that kind of behavior carries over into how you behave outside the home. And it leads to so many problems in the world. It leads to so much anger and hate and discord and divisiveness. And, you know, it just makes you want to just say, stop, just stop. We're all here. We've all made mistakes. We're all on the same little rock hurtling through space. We've been made the same way. We've been given certain gifts. Why can't we just lift each other up instead of trying to build ourselves up and tear others down, you know, pushing someone down to get ahead? And that's what I think this quote really is about. It's being yourself in spite of everyone else telling you that you can't be yourself. You have to be something else. You can't believe that. That's not culturally normal. That's not who we're going to be. So, Paul, as we think about this quote, and if there's someone out there that's like, I just don't know how do I be myself? How do I use this quote to move ahead? How am I going to use this to win my week? What advice do you give them? How do they do that?
There's no easy answer to that. I mean, there's really no direct path. You have to stumble and fall. You have to climb. And I think anything that comes to us easily is not worth having, especially when it's as valuable as your identity.
Yeah.
But I think that if you find something about yourself that you wouldn't sacrifice for anything, build on that. You know, that's if you find something that brings you joy, build on that. Yeah. Even if it comes at the detriment of yourself because somebody disagrees with how you do it or the platform you use to do it, doesn't matter.
Yep.
You know, I think that becoming who you are always meant to be involves climbing those mountains, getting over those hurdles of judgment and opinion and ignorant supposition from others. So I think you just have to battle through that. And if you have the fortitude to do it, you're going to do great things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful. You know, I think a lot of times we, as parents, we really do a disservice to our kids because we tell them things like, you can be anything you want to be. Listen, I had two boys. I love my two boys. Those kids were never going to be an NBA all-star. They did not inherit athletic ability. Okay. My fault. My bad. They can't. It's interesting because we say this to try to encourage you should chase your dreams. You can be anything. But what we don't say is what you really need to do is find your gift. Find what you've been given. What's that God-given gift that's inside of you that you're intended to use? And there you can find your passion. There you can find who you want to be. There you can find who you can be and how you can make this world a better place. And so, you know, I cringe every time I hear parents, oh, little Johnny, little Sally, you can be anything you want to be. No, they can't. who they need to be is who they were created to be. And that is to be themselves. And that's why I love this quote, because the world, even as parents, we tell our kids, we try to convince them to be something that maybe they weren't intended to be. And yep. It's out of love and it's out of support. So it doesn't always have to come from a bad place. But at the end of the day, every single one of us, every person has to figure out who are we and how do I make this world a better place based on who I am and have the courage and the self-confidence to do it. And that's daunting. It's hard.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it's so attractive.
And that's why it's so great, because as you said, nothing that comes easy is really worth having. And so I think that in and of itself is a fantastic quote.
I think it's very funny, though. It's like, yeah, you know, we're a multi-sport family.
Yeah.
And I listen to all the parents talk about, oh, well, you know, we're in soccer and baseball and basketball and volleyball and gymnastics and dance. And all we do is drive. And it's, why do you do it? You don't do it because you think your kid's going to be an NBA All-Star. You do it so they have an example of what it's like to work with a team.
Yeah.
You know, you want to develop social skills, and I get all that. And they love being with their friends, and that's great. But at the end of the day, I want my kids to know how to work with a team.
Yeah.
I want them to know how to use their strengths to help somebody else who's weak in that area and vice versa. And I think ultimately that should be the reason why we're multi-sport families. We want them exposed to that team environment as much as possible, receptive to coaching as much as possible, whether it be in life or in sports. Being able to hear that coach's voice and follow that leadership is a critical skill that I'm scared to death our generations are losing.
Yeah.
So that's why we do multiple sports, not because I want them to have a scholarship somewhere, but because I want them to learn, number one, there's points of authority you just have to listen to.
Absolutely.
And they'll make you better, unless you have a bad coach, in which case I don't have any advice for that. But
switch teams.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's why they have the transfer portal.
That's right. I wouldn't be surprised if that reared its ugly head in Little League at some point. But it's a really good point in sports, you know, sports and dance and music, those kind of things are critical to develop those soft skills and being able to be coached and taught and how to learn and how to listen to authority. Well, another one I think we're losing in sports that's a shame is how to lose with grace, how to fail, how to respond to failure. You know, you take the score out of it because we don't want them to feel bad because they lost. Feeling bad because you lost is life. They're going to lose at so many things. They're going to fail at so many things. So we need to teach our kids how to respond and how to learn from your failures so that you can come back better the next time.
There's no participation trophy for life.
I haven't gotten one. I must not be participating if there is.
Yeah, my hand's been out and nobody's put anything in it. So, you know. But I mean, this, and I think that the participation trophy is such a great metaphor for where we are today culturally, is that everybody believes that just being somewhere earns them something. And it's not true.
No.
It's not true. If you're not giving your best, then there is no trophy.
No.
Now, if you give your best and you still fail, that's a lesson. And you can still win from that.
Yep.
But giving 50%, the rest of your team needed 100. You gave 50. So now they've all got to give 125% to make up for your shortcomings. And that's just not fair. That's not right.
That's right.
But we're breeding a generation of kids that believe that somebody's going to pick up my slack no matter what. And I'll still get a trophy. And that's just that's holding them back from where they need to be.
It's setting them up for failure in life. And they're not going to know how to respond to that. And so it's a scary proposition. It really is. And so, you know, encouraging our kids to be their best, to be the best version of themselves, and to give everything that they've got to something greater than themselves. And it's not always going to turn out, you know, all sunshine and rainbows. You're not going to win every game. There's no athlete that has ever won every game. I mean, unless maybe in boxing you can go undefeated, I guess. But that's not a sport that I think I want to encourage my kid to go into anyway. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. The quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Paul Pappy is the CEO of SunFast Corporation. Paul, I want to thank you so much for being on the Quotivation Podcast. This has been an absolute pleasure.
I've truly enjoyed it. I appreciate your time and the audience's time as well. This is just, it's great to talk about how hard work does pay off. I promise.
It absolutely does. And it's paid off for Paul. He is a successful entrepreneur. He is on four boards, serving his community, serving his family, and serving those that work. Paul, again, thank you so much for being on. We look forward to great things coming from you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Paul, for being on the Quotivation Podcast and that powerful quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. We appreciate Paul coming on the Quotivation Podcast. And hey, I want to appreciate you for sticking around just a little bit longer. We've got just enough time for the last slice of cheesecake.
How about some dessert before you go? There isn't anything that can't be solved over a slice of cheesecake. So before we wrap things up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the last slice of cheesecake.
To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. A quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, brought to us by our special guest, Paul Pappy. You know, this quote, I think it means that staying true to you, to who you are, is one of the hardest things to do and one of the most impressive things that you can do. I think every day we are faced with pressures from others to act a certain way, dress a certain way, think a certain way, talk a certain way, vote a certain way. These pressures can come from friends, from family, from the media, from society, from the online network of friends that we tend to place too high of an importance on their opinions. It's like everyone's trying to shape us into what they think we should be. What Ralph Waldo Emerson is saying here, that despite all of those pressures, the most important thing is to stay true to yourself. Don't change who you are just to fit in or to make others happy. Being yourself means knowing your own values, your own beliefs, your own desires, your goals. If you don't have a value statement, I would encourage every single one of you to find someone that will help you write that value statement. If you don't know who to reach out to, then email me, thequotivationpodcast@gmail.com. I will put you in touch with Denise Beers Kipper, who helped me write my value statement. It's so clarifying. It's so clear. It's so grounding. If you don't have a value statement, you don't know what you're missing. It's like a compass in a storm. Keeps you grounded to who you are. In simpler terms, I think Emerson is telling us that we're simply to be authentic. Not let the outside world change us. To take courage and strength in being yourself. And that it's worth it because it leads to true happiness and fulfillment. We don't need to shy away from our past. As Paul said, there are a lot of things in our past I'm sure most of us would be ashamed of, but there are also the things that helped shape us. Paul talked about being an addict for 8 years. 8 years. It's a long time. And he's been clean and sober for almost 20. And I would dare say that I would venture a guess that Paul would say, I wouldn't change that because it has allowed him to become the person that he is today. And the person that he is today is so much stronger, so much more aware of the pitfalls that come in the road of life. Because he knows who he is, he knows his values, his beliefs, he's grounded in them. He has accomplished what Emerson called the greatest accomplishment. And that is to be himself in a world that is constantly trying to make him something else. I hope you can find some nuggets of truth somewhere within this episode that's going to help you when you're weak. Whether it be from the shot of motivation, whether it be from the interview with Paul, or from the quote itself, from Ralph Waldo Emerson. But let's all strive to be ourselves in a world that is critical, that tells us who we should be and how we should think. We need to be ourselves. We need to be authentic, because authenticity is the most important thing that leads to trust, that leads to fulfillment, that leads to true happiness. Be true to yourselves, and I guarantee you, you'll win your week. That's all the time we have for this episode of the Quotivation Podcast. I want to thank Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage. I want to thank Paul Pappy for being a very special guest this week. And of course, as always, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for reaching out over the last 2 weeks, telling us how special those two episodes were. First, episode 20, looking back on the second 9 group of guests, and then adding my own quote for episode 20. And then last week's episode, where we honored fallen soldier on Memorial Day. If you missed either of those episodes, please go back and check them out. Guarantee you, you will be glad you did. And until next time, stay quotivated.
You have been listening to the Quotivation Podcast, hosted by America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. If you would like to book Jody to speak at your company, conference, or next event, visit www.jodypowellspeaks.com. You can also email him at Jody, that's J-O-D-Y, at jodypowellspeaks.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Quotivation Podcast. And remember, stay quotivated.